live your whole dang life, Mike, and never own a share of a stock. You can sure live your whole life and never own a Bitcoin. You know, you cannot, no single person of the 7 billion of us on this planet can live without some sort of a shelter, right? So if I'm able to buy in a place that population is growing and jobs are growing, people are going to want to live there in a long time. It's the most no-brainer type of knowing there will be demand.
Are you looking for freedom? Freedom from the daily grind and hustle? Or just finding a way to live the life you always wanted? Then join us on the Investing for Freedom podcast. Our host, Mike Ayala, will help you discover new ways to find freedom with tips, insights, and interviews. You'll learn the exact systems he's used to travel the world and live his best life. True success and happiness are all about freedom. And here's your roadmap on how to find freedom on your own terms. Welcome to the Investing for Freedom podcast. Here's your host, Mike Ayala.
Thank you for joining me on the Investing for Freedom podcast. Guys, I am super excited for this episode today. I have Mandy McAllister on the show. And here's the thing, I'm just going to be completely transparent. We were just talking off camera. And as you guys know on the show, I think we're actually like episode 450 or something right now, which I'm like just blown away by. And you guys have been so gracious. But one thing that I've been pretty adamant about on the show, and this is not to take away from Mandy today, this is to add to it. I normally don't bring people on that I've never met before, but Mandy's background, her pedigree, it caught my producer's attention. And he said, hey, you might want to have Mandy on the show. And I said, yes. And we just had a great little conversation here. And I think this is just going to be an amazing episode. And one of the things, you know, I'm led by intuition on a lot of things that I do. Of course, when we're buying a house or whatever, the numbers need to make sense. You can't do everything on intuition. But I'm a pretty good judge of humans generally. And when something just tells go. And one of the things that she just said off camera, the GoBundance community, as the audience here knows, has been such an impact for me. And Mandy, you wouldn't know this, but I'm a big fan of, you know, mentorship, masterminds, communities. That's changed my world. I started my first business in 2004. I was 24 years old. I was a plumber, didn't know anything about business, didn't go to business school. And immediately I found a coach. And every time that I've had success, it's been because of a coach, a mentor, or a mastermind community, or an event that I went to. And GoBundance completely changed my world in 2018. And Mandy, I want to share this for you and the audience who hasn't heard this before. In 2018, I literally looked at my wife and I said, you know, I want to find a mastermind or a community that helps work on me as an individual, helps me as a man grow. And you know what my wife said? Have you ever heard of GoBundance? And I said, no. And she sent me the link to GoBundance. And I had just read David Osborne's Wealth Can't Wait. And then I read Miracle Morning for Millionaires. And then a couple weeks later, she sends me this link to GoBundance. And so I joined the GoBundance community. And it has totally changed just who I am as an individual. Yes, it's helped my business. Yes, it's helped my, you know, so many areas. But the one thing that I realized that year, Mandy, I was raised by a mom who was, you know, my dad was basically just a horrible person. And my mom's an amazing human. So I was raised by my mother. And then there was a period of time where I lived with my grandparents, and my grandma was a very strong woman. And then I got married to my wife at the age of 20. And I woke up in 2018 and I realized that I didn't have any strong male relationships in my life. And I joined GoBundance. And the one pillar that really got me excited about it was the authentic relationship piece. And what you said off camera made me realize, okay, this is why. And I know we're going to talk about investing and your story of exiting W-2. I love the way you said it. I bought my way out of the W-2 job. You've been successful as an investor, you teach and mentor. But the thing that I got excited about is when you said, I'm the CEO of GoBundance, because GoBundance has done a great job, obviously, growing in the men's community, but we want the same thing for women. And one of the things that my wife has said so many times is, man, I wish I had that. I wish I had what you found in 2018. And so I just had to share that. Longest intro ever, maybe for me, but I wanted to share that with you and the audience for context, because I think what you're doing in your own life and what you've done is going to be a huge impact. But also that statement that you made about GoBundance for women, just super stoked by. So thanks for coming on.
I could not be more excited, Mike. Thank you for taking a chance and betting on me. It's going to be a real fun conversation.
Yeah. So obviously we'll get into GoBundance, but why don't we start with some background? And again, I love what you said about I bought my way out of a W-2. So great.
Sure. So I've kind of always had entrepreneurship in my bones. My dad's a farmer. My mom owned a small business too. So this seeing my parents make their living from their own entities was something that always fed me, but I went the safe route, right? Like I did all of the right degrees. I did a master's in economics. I did all the right things and got all the right grades and ended up finding medical device sales, which felt like I was chasing the money because you can make a solid living in medical device sales. And that felt entrepreneurial enough for a while. And then at some point, some things happened that felt outside of my moral compass. And I had, you know, probably a full-on panic attack in a hospital parking deck. But then I realized I had just bought a couple of small apartment buildings, a 4 and a 6. So I had like, I don't know, $2,500 coming in a month. And I realized, I'm not going to be homeless and penniless under a ditch, you know, under a bridge somewhere, because I'm going to be able to pay for a mortgage and we're going to eat rice and beans. But as a single mom, I'm going to be able to make this work because of the passive income I've got. And it was in that moment that I realized I needed to dive in more fully to that passive investment or that passive income thing than relying on this W-2, which could have gotten rid of me at any given moment. So that goal changed in about 2017.
You know, I'm excited to just unwrap this and to continue unpackaging it. But I'm curious because, and we didn't talk about this, but I saw it in your bio. You have a son, and you just mentioned this. You're. I don't know if you still are a single mom or you were, but you know, that kind of pulls on my heartstrings because, you know, one of the things that I was missing, my mom, again, amazing human, but there was a period of time where I kind of went by the wayside because she was working two jobs, she was going to college to be a nurse, she was doing everything that she could to provide for us. But when I look backwards, of course, because of my upbringing, but then also because nobody's home. I mean, I literally, you say eat rice and beans. There was many nights where I just cut open a can of corn and that was my dinner. I don't know if my mom even listens to this, but she was doing everything that she could. Mm-hmm. But what I love about what you said was just the transition that you made to own the future. And then you made this comment in your bio. You've got a son that's also interested in real estate investing. So I want to unpack, you know, what life by design looked like for you after that, and obviously leading up to that. But to me, that's the thing. Tim's actually my podcast producer, but he's also my son. And one thing that my wife and I have always said is like the most important thing. And even at an early age, we always said, we want to make memories over possessions. But what I found out is that you can have both. But I want to unpack your journey, you know, with you and your son. And I just think it's so cool that he wants to invest in real estate.
He's seen the power of it and he's seen the impact of it on other people's lives, you know? So when I kind of had that epiphany that, you know, I'm not going to die because I have income coming in, I can figure out, it becomes a math problem. What is more easy to put truth to than a numbers problem, you know? So what I did is I had just done a Tony Robbins seminar called Wealth Mastery. I don't know if you've done it, but it's very heavy on the stocks, which is not my jam. I actually traded on the floor of the Board of Trade prior to getting into medical sales. So I am in no way in equities, and it's for a reason because I'd been there and I'd done that, and I want something to own that's physical. And end of the day, my primary takeaway of that seminar was that there's multiple levels of financial freedom. There's the Maslow's hierarchy of needs stuff is met, like I'm going to be able to pay my mortgage and eat rice and beans. And then there's differing levels. And then there's I've completely replaced what it costs me to live a month of my life in passive income, and that plus a buffer. And then I can afford, you know, the private jet or whatever thing you dream for. Right. So after doing that math, you can't, I so firmly believe, Mike, that you can't hit a fuzzy target. So if you are trying to grope into the darkness towards something, you will get nowhere because you're looking at nothing. But if you get really crystal clear on anything that you're looking for, then you're going to be able to hit that target way faster. So I did the math on what I needed, how much money I needed to be able to leave my W-2, and I got after it. And I saw the power of multifamily because I bought a 4 and a 6 by this point. And I wanted the agency debt, the non-recourse Fannie Mae, Freddie Mac stuff loans that are 30-year amortized, that they don't come after me. I'm not personally liable if it hits the fan and the change of the price of the asset changes significantly over time. So I started doing that. And 2, 3, 4 acquisitions later, I had more than that number that I needed to see to be willing to leave my W-2. So in that process, though, single mom, I'm lucky enough that I'm found my person and I'm blending families and we're getting married this summer and it's so wonderful. But that chapter of having been a single mom, you got to take the little boy with you if you want to go do anything. So, you know, part of me thinks that the 3-year-old version of himself thinks real estate investing is a happy meal and like looking at houses, and because it was. But now he sees that there's a piece of a reward. There's a piece of, okay, we bought this 53 unit. We're going to go on a little trip to celebrate. What is the thing that I can do to make it feel really neat so that he's rooting for me in this process?
Yeah. I love what you just said about the 3-year-old boy and the Happy Meal perspective versus, and you didn't say this, but, you know, a grown-up real estate investor that understands that it's a business. And it's interesting because I was just on another podcast talking with a guy there. And by the way, as a side note, I love Legos. And one of the main reasons that I love Legos is because when I was little, again, I grew up really poor. And my grandma, about every 6 or 8 weeks, we'd go over to this city called Pocatello, Idaho. And it was like a big day for me. And I'd get a Happy Meal. And one thing as an adult that I realized is like the reason why I still love putting Legos together is because that was like just an association. And I love the way that you associated, you know, one level of real estate, and I'll get to the question here, one level of real estate and an idea that he had versus what real estate is and can actually be, including Fannie and Freddie type loans and all of that. Well, for me, the correlation was like, you know, the experience with McDonald's. And one thing that I want to ask you, when I started investing in real estate in 2007, I had a plumbing and heating business, and real estate was like this side thing for me. Mm-hmm. I kind of looked at it, maybe I didn't look at it to replace my business income. I was literally thinking, if I buy 20 properties over 10 years, and then when I'm 65 years old, like I'll have these all paid off and it'll be my retirement. That was where my mindset was when I first started investing. And by the time I sold my business in 2014, I had 45 singles and 5 mobile home parks and commercial buildings. But this is where the question comes in. So there's a lot of talk, you know, coming through the teens, which we were drunk on cheap money. There's gurus everywhere teaching real estate. Yeah. And by the way, I'm a huge, huge fan of real estate. But I love what you said about the little boy that had the mindset of, you know, McDonald's and looking at houses versus the older boy that, you know, maybe understands now what real estate investing truly is. And my epiphany when you said that was the same thing that I've been thinking about so often, because I think generally speaking, people think that real estate investing is easy and it can be, but I think the thing that people don't understand is that it's a business. And just like any other business, the house or the multifamily or the mobile home park or whatever is just the product. So I would love for you to kind of, you know, maybe speak to us about the idea of investing. And I think everybody should own real estate, so I'm not trying to shut it down, but I love your journey. And what do people need to know about that?
So I think, you know, I love boring stuff. This is another thing we talked about as we logged on here, but having come from equities, you can lose your shirt in a minute. The only way you make money, really, unless you're an options trader, and there's a lot of other nuance that I'm not going to go into, but you buy low and you sell high. That is the single way that most people earn money in equities. So if you are investing in real estate, there are 4 ways that you earn money. Yes, you can buy low and sell high, but probably you're renting it out for more than it costs you to operate it. So the cash flow, your tenants are paying down the loan. So the loan pay down is basically cash flow to you. and then the tax benefits that you get from real estate. So that plus this idea of Maslow's hierarchy of needs, that if you look at, you can live your whole dang life, Mike, and never own a share of a stock. You can sure live your whole life and never own a Bitcoin. You know, you cannot, no single person of the 7 billion of us on this planet can live without some sort of a shelter, right? So if I'm able to buy in a place, the population is growing and jobs are growing, people are going to want to live there in a long time. It's the most no-brainer type of a knowing there will be demand. There's actually a really good book by, his name's Morgan Housel. I don't remember the exact name, but it's The Same as Always. So rather than trying to predict the future, that things will change in the future, try to predict the stuff that's going to stay the same, right? And I suspect that people will still need a place to live in 30 years, right? So anyway, if I buy enough apartment buildings with those four ways to earn money, then I'm in a really good spot to set up a future.
Yeah, no, I love that. By the way, Morgan was a previous guest of the podcast. And so you're and that was because of GoBundance, as a side note. Psychology and money, same as ever. I love the guy. And actually when we had Morgan on, my wife and I interviewed him together and we kind of weaved it into, you know, marriage, philosophy around money and how do you separate all that and pull it together. So, interesting. I love your approach from a business perspective, and obviously this comes from your background, but not getting into it flippantly. And what's interesting, so I've thought about Maslow's hierarchy of needs forever. And in fact, just in the previous episode that, you know, the audience probably just heard last week, we literally just recorded it. I actually was bringing up Maslow's hierarchy of needs because, and I'll share this and then ask what your perspective is short-term and long-term on real estate through that lens. I've been thinking about this because as a real estate investor, whether seasoned or new, one of the challenges that we have is like, we're just in this weird time. Mm-hmm. And I've always said, you know, the future or the history repeats itself. But Mandy, I'm kind of in this place where I'm like, I believe that's true. And I think we need to learn the lessons from history. But I also don't think that we've ever experienced what we're experiencing right now with, you know, the amount of money that's been printed and the inflation mm-hmm. challenges and interest rates. And by the way, as much as I want interest rates to come down, I've been in the camp of, I don't think we're going to see this drastic drop in interest right. rates anytime soon. And another thing about history, you know, 5 years ago, I would have said the government needs interest rates to be low because they have all this debt they have to pay off. And I've said that before, but they don't have to pay it off.
They can inflate it away.
Totally. And even from a tax perspective, like we're in this time where real estate investors are thinking like, you know, depreciation, bonus depreciation going away, staying. And yes, I want it to stay. But the reality is there's another way for the government to get taxes and it's called inflation, which I love that you pointed that out. So here's my question for you and back to Maslow's hierarchy of needs. And I've been wrestling with this. S&P 500, all-time high. You've got a trading background. You understand equities. But here's what I think is interesting. When it really comes down to Maslow's hierarchy of needs and basic human needs being food, water, shelter, psychological needs, we may be in a challenging period of time for real estate investors. What's a good deal? What's a bad deal? Mm-hmm. But if you can buy a deal that cash flows and you can keep it long enough, man, I'm such a fan. But back to Maslow's hierarchy of needs, it takes people a year, 2 years, 3 years to adjust to a new normal. Yeah. And I think people are going to adjust to the point, this is what I just said previously on the previous podcast, instead of buying a $1,000 iPhone, we're going to start looking at what really matters. And the thing that people are not going to let go is their houses. I mean, unless they have to, their houses, they're going to pay their rent. They're going to stay in their shelter. Mm-hmm. It just hadn't really got to that point yet. And so my philosophy on this is, I actually think that we're in a period of time where people are paying attention. They're going to start cutting costs. And I don't think that real estate is going down anytime soon. One of the things that we have to wait for is rent to catch up, right? Because housing prices have gone up, but rent hasn't inflated simultaneously, but it has to. And I think that people are going to continue to pay rent and maybe give up the iPhone. What are your thoughts?
So I think in terms of when we're talking housing, there's two kind of completely siloed conversations. There's single family homes, and then there's like apartment buildings. And I heard a really good talk by an economist at some multifamily event I was at. And if you look at the rent growth and the like purchase price growth of multifamily, it's balanced. Yes, there are however many hundreds of trillions of dollars of notes coming due in the next year or so. Well, some of those notes, they were begun 12 years ago. Right? Like you can't convince me that there's not enough equity in those 12 years ago incepted loans to not be able to refinance and be okay. But the single family home stuff, like I'm not moving because there's a 2.5% loan on this house, right? I think that, many people will need to transition into living into, these, apartment building type stuff when they would prefer to rent a single family home because the numbers won't work as much. But, because real estate earns money four ways, it is so forgiving. There is not, in my opinion, yes, prices might go down, but think about this, that when we hear the real estate crash, what did the biggest crash of a market go down in terms of pricing? What was it like? I don't know, 12% home prices reduced by 12%. Well, a 12% reduction in a stock, we call it a Tuesday. You know what I mean? So understand the waves and the it's an illiquid asset, but that means that people can't act emotionally with real estate in the same way that they can with stocks. So the swings aren't necessarily as wild because the human behavior and need to panic, you can't execute on a panic and lift and then 6 months later and so it takes too much time. But my personal ethos on investing. And we kind of hinted to this off camera too, that multifamily will always be my end game. Setting up apartment buildings that will pay me forever, that I can be really proud to own, that I would have lived in one time in my life in myself on agency debt that's non-recourse, that is always going to be my end game. Is there price discovery right now that's making those deals doable? No. The transaction amounts, the transactions have dropped by 66%. Year over year from 22 to 23, right? So I have been, my plan of investing has set me up so that I can sit on my hands when I need to sit on my hands. And the thing that we chatted about was looking at the guys who've made it to 100, 200 million, what's different between them in net worth versus the guys who make it to 5 or 10? Well, the ones who stay all in just on real estate, that you can really white knuckle to 10 million, but to get to 100, 200, you really need a business interest. So what I've chosen to do with my time is rather than beat my head against a multifamily wall that isn't doable, I looked into businesses and I found a real estate heavy business. I bought a car wash that helps me with that same depreciation. I still get that commercial real estate play that rhymes, and I'm working to understand that type of a blue collar business at the same time. So what can you do in the meantime to really support your overarching ethos if the thing that is your end game isn't working right now?
Yeah, no, I love that. And again, I feel like I'm on Groundhog Day here because we just had a very similar conversation. But one of the things that I pointed out, and I've been thinking about this because I started in the plumbing and HVAC business. And when things got challenging, we were able to adjust quickly. So I had a gold mine go bankrupt on me in 2007. And they owed me $400,000 and it almost sunk me. And I sat in a conference room for an entire day with my controller and a mentor of mine. And we looked at everything. And what we came down to was like, yeah, we can cut some costs primarily in the form of employees. However, maybe if we look at increased revenue, what's the opportunity? And so what we did from a business perspective is we sat and we said, okay, where do we have opportunity? And for us, it was equipment replacement. And so we designed in that day, rather than, cutting my business down to bare bones and laying everybody off, I did have to lay some people off, but we just decided to adjust. And we were doing probably, a very limited amount of equipment replacement. And 12 months later, we had done almost $1 million in additional revenue in just equipment replacement. So the reason why I share that is to just kind of mirror back what I just heard you say. And there's a lot of other reasons to be in business too, but it's speed. And what I heard you say too, and I realized this kind of the hard way because I'm a slow learner. The problem with real estate is there's not speed in it. And I think a lot of people that are getting in really need to understand what you were saying because I think that, you know, they get in, and again, back to the, it's passive and it's easy and there's cheap money. And well, none of that exists. And if you do get lucky and you time that right, and then you need to make quick moves like I did on the business side, you can't move that quickly in real estate.
Mm-hmm. Which is a blessing and a curse, right? Because it's the other side of that coin is that it keeps you from making the panic mistakes that happen in the stock market. But another thing of business versus real estate that I think stands worth pointing out is if I'm going to buy commercial real estate at a 4 cap, let's say, so it's value equals NOI divided by a cap rate, I'm basically saying I will pay $25 for that dollar of NOI, for that dollar of cash flow, right? If I'm going to go buy a business like a car wash, I can pay 3x EBITDA. It costs me $3 for a dollar of cash flow. So the speed and the ability to, you know, buy cheaper cash flow dollars is really, you know, the reason that people with ridiculous net worths end up there, because it's much, much faster, like you said.
Yeah. You know, what's interesting too, I love your car wash analogy, because I never had any intention in getting into commercial real estate. And when I say commercial, I mean literally just commercial buildings, office buildings, industrial. Mm-hmm. But I bought my first one because I had a business that I needed an office for. And so I bought it and we outgrew it in 8 months. Wow. And I was like, I'm keeping this. And I bought a second one and we outgrew it in like 2 years. And so then I bought a third one. And those are like some of my favorite buildings. But again, just from the car wash component, I'm guessing you own the land and you have the operating business.
So a happy accident is I had some 1031 exchange funds from one of my single family homes I was getting out of. And I structured the acquisition into two different acquisitions, one for the real estate and one for the business. And I love the idea of a long-term play of potentially just selling off the business piece and then remaining the landlord, because that is getting to take advantage of the business piece is great. And you get to charge a higher rent potentially. But, you know, it's the whole business buying stuff, there's so much glamour to it right now. And at least on the GoBundance Women side, it's kind of all the rage, because if real estate deals aren't penciling, where can I put my time? But it's a very different animal. There's not like a slew of property managers to help you figure out how to manage a car wash, and cobbling together things as you go is not ideal in whatever you're working to do. So understand that they're very different.
Yeah, and I'm a huge fan of what you just said, because I got into real estate because I was a successful business owner. Mm-hmm. And as I alluded to earlier, it's not because I, you know, had an MBA or any of that. Like I was so young and naive, and my business was growing so fast that I was forced to hire people. Like the whole idea of who, not how, all the things that, like, you know, everybody, I didn't know any of that. I was forced into it because my business, I was so fortunate. My business just skyrocketed. But then I got into real estate because I had a good CPA and I had a good coach, and Karen and I were thinking long-term. And so I started, you know, kind of backwards to what a lot of real estate investors do, where real estate, I was looking at real estate as a long game, mm-hmm. not as a business, not as a strategy to, you know, become, it was long for me because I was a business owner first. And I love what you said, because there's so many people that are like, oh, buy a business and it's so easy. And it's not easy. Now, that doesn't mean that, listen, I'm a fan. Buy a business, build a business, buy real estate, build your portfolio, but none of them are easy. And that's why I love, and we can get into this, you can respond to that. And then I'd love to get into your, you know, just kind of mentoring and why you do that and the passion behind it. Because as I've said all along, the only reason that I ever found any success is because I surrounded myself with people that could keep me from going in the gutter. And that's it.
You know, I love these multi-prong approach. Like this is what diversification feels like to me. Like real estate as my long game, business is my engine for cash flow to pour into that real estate bucket. But end of the day, you know, you can't catch, if you're going to try to catch two rabbits at the same time, Mike, you're probably going to catch zero rabbits. So you can do everything, you just can't do it all at once. So if both businesses and real estate acquisitions feel interesting to whoever's listening, my encouragement to you is pick one, put blinders on, run after that for say 6 months, and then, you know, work on something else. But I totally agree. The mentorship stuff, I was a college athlete. Like, it was because of the people I was around that I ever dreamed, as a little farm girl from a town of 800 people, that anything bigger for my life could happen. So I knew that being around people doing bigger things is how to get there. I really think that you're given two arms for a reason, one to pull yourself up and then one to pull other people up with you. And when I was kind of working to establish this real estate floor of income so that I could buy my way out of my W-2, it all started with that calculator, which I'll give you and your listeners a link to. It's a freebie on my website. But basically, if you do that math and you know what you need to do to run after something, it gets way easier. And the beauty of real estate is there's so much choice and you can do whatever the heck you want. But the worst part about real estate is there's so much choice and you can do whatever the heck you want and you have to choose, right? So a thing that I have found a lot of fulfillment with is helping people kind of apply their limiting factors to really, you know, focus in and get their brain primed to see the thing that matters. Because an analogy I love is if you ask your grandma for a sweater for Christmas, she might get you a sweater vest with a donkey and a pom-pom. And she did exactly what you asked for, right? But if you say what you want, J. Crew, cable knit, dark gray, size medium, you are going to end up with the thing that you'd hoped for. So how can you get clear so that you can figure out what you're looking for?
That's so good. So I want to jump into the tactical component of like your mentoring program, but I have, I guess, some just a thought, because you talked a lot about Fannie and Freddie, that you were, you know, you were fortunate enough, I guess, from an early time to know what you were going after. But I have a feeling that a lot of the audience maybe doesn't even know why you wanted that. And I know that's like kind of a macro perspective, but I'd love for you to just dissect that and then lead us into, you know, what is somebody that wants to get started in real estate? And even the fact that you bought yourself out of a W-2, I actually think that half of my audience, that was probably like something that said, whoa. So start with Fannie and Freddie for me, and then let's dive into.
So when I started investing, and when I was bit by the bug of real estate investing, you know, I bought a fourplex on a normal residential loan, and then I wanted to go bigger. And I learned very quickly that if you go buy a six unit, let's say, because that was my next acquisition, you go to a bank and you build a relationship with a banker and you get one term sheet. And if you want to compare it to anything, you go to a second bank and you build a relationship with a banker and you get number two term sheet. It's so ridiculously fragmented. And the terms of those loans are not great. They're usually a 20-year amortization, a 3 or a 5-year term. So they're only good for 3 or 5 years, which a business cycle, if you look at history, they're 10 or 12 years for business cycles. If you're stuck with a 3-year loan and something big changes like it has in the last 2 years, that we're talking in 2024 right now, you get caught with your pants down. So how can I set myself up so that I don't lose a crap ton of money? That was my entire goal of kind of being thoughtful and, you know, backing into a strategy. Well, okay, I need a loan product where I'm not going to lose my shirt. I need a loan product that's not going to reset at a time that I'm going to end up really nervous because, you know, who knows, maybe interest rates will go from 2% to 7%. And the price discovery will fall from the heavens. And why would that ever happen? Well, things like that do happen. And luckily, I was in a spot that I'd made some decisions to keep me safe. So the Fannie Mae Freddie Mac loan, and the reason that I love it is if you go bigger than residential, you end up in this like black hole of not great loan terms that end up putting people in positions that it's a significantly more risky investment than it needs to be because of the loan product, right? But the minute I learned of, you probably have heard of Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac for the residential stuff. Well, they also have investment grade vehicles. Google the Freddie Mac small balance loan program. That is the easiest to get into one. But basically, you have to borrow more than $1 million. And there's a number of other things, criteria that you have to meet to get into those loans. But if you're going to borrow $1 million rather than $800,000, you're going to be able to get this 30-year AM better rate, non-recourse, so that you're not personally liable debt. So that investment that you're making becomes infinitely less risky. So if you know with that, the begin with the end in mind, that if I want that to feel less risky, then you figure out the type of asset you want to back into, what market, and those types of things.
I know I was just going to leave it with you, but I'm curious, based on what you just said, like, it's got to be $1 million minimum. You triggered something in my brain, because I have conversations with people in my audience all the time that are successful business owners. They're making $1 million a year, literally, and they're scared to borrow $100,000. And you just said you've got to borrow $1 million. And so I would love for you to just defuse the audience on why that's okay to borrow $1 million.
We got some stress eating out there going on right now. Well,
And sorry, but successful people that have a lot of money in the bank and are doing very well, and their businesses have been doing this way for 10, 15, 20 years, and they're scared to borrow $1 million.
So let's talk about why borrowing becomes risky. Borrowing becomes risky is if that money that you've borrowed doesn't create some sort of a cash flow that will easily pay back that loan, right? So if you're going to go into a brand new business entity, something that you don't have a safety net, it's completely unfounded and unproven, maybe you're justified in feeling nervous. But back to Maslow's hierarchy of needs, people will always need a place to live. Now let's talk about if you were going to buy a single family home for $1 million. You will have one guy, one family probably, living in this $1 million house that owes you that rent. And if they can't pay that rent, you get $0 rent. You are basically economically vacant if that one family can't pay. However, if you go buy a 25-unit apartment building with that $1 million loan, then there are 25 families that are working day in and day out to live in your beautiful space to pay off your loan for you. And if you have underwritten, run those numbers well enough that you know that you can depend on more money coming in than is going to go out every month, it becomes very forgiving over time. Let's say even as much as 10%. Let's say three of your families can't pay, right? You still have 19, you still have, you know, 80% of your building paying their rent on time. And more than likely, especially if you ran your numbers in the right way, you will know that you'll be able to withstand that amount of economic vacancy and still be able to hold on to that deal. So it's all about risk mitigation. And, you know, it's something that until you've experienced it in whatever aspect of life, in business, in real estate investing, in whatever, time and time again, a thing I know to be true is the bigger you go, the easier it gets. So in your businesses, if you scale big enough, you can afford someone to take on those headaches that you hate handling. If you go big enough in real estate, you have enough doors that one, you can afford somebody to be looking at your asset full time. And two, you've really balanced out the risk, because someone not paying their rent is not that big a deal, you know?
Yeah. I love what you said earlier about I have to invest for every $1 that, or for every $3 that I invest, I get one with the business. And then it's the opposite with real estate. And just pulling it back to the business owner's mindset and mirroring what you just said, again, with business owners, so many times, because they've been successful in one business, they just think that they'll chase five rabbits, yet they're scared to get into real estate. And it's because they think they know. But I love what you said. And maybe they do know how to run a business, but that doesn't mean that, you know, a muffin shop correlates to a plumbing and heating company, which I think that's a misnomer that's just being spread out there right now. Is like, I get people all the time that call me and they want to buy an HVAC company. And I'm like, well, are you going to work the HVAC? No, no, I have a job. Or, you know, I have a business that I run. And I'm just like, man, if you only know the amount of work that has to go into an HVAC company, you're nuts. But this is the business owner's like dilemma and sickness. We think that because we look backwards 15 years and we built this thing that maybe is easy now, but you don't remember the beginning days. And then we're scared to invest in real estate based on the formulas you said, this is completely backwards.
Mm-hmm. The thing is, in business that I found and understand, the businesses that I run are, one, a mastermind, and two, a car wash. So also not HVAC, also not muffin shop. However, it's a very specialized set of skills to be able to, you know, nuance any one of these business specific things. And there's not like, go hire this group to handle that nuance for you. It's a very much more involved hiring process and training process to get the right butts in the right seat. However, on the real estate side, property management is the thing it's not cookie cutter. And there are some that are friggin' incredible and some that are worth nothing, in my opinion. But there are many of them and they're easy to contact and they're a little bit more commoditized than a COO for a muffin company. You know what I mean? So understand that the workforce is much more available to you to not need to be as day-to-day with real estate as it is with business.
Yeah, so good. Okay, now I'm going to let you circle back to what I said before. I would love to just hear a little bit about, number one, why you decided to go into mentoring and kind of what does that process look like? Because I have a feeling at this stage in the conversation, people are probably interested because there is a fear. But as I've said all along, when I was stuck or lost, what did we do? We reach out to a mentor. Would love to, you know, just give you a share. What is that?
You know, I also sought out mentorship when I wanted to add a zero to the size of property I was buying. I didn't want to add a zero to the mistake. And going through the processes that, you know, that I saw the gurus have that were ridiculously expensive, you know, what I really needed was a way to narrow my focus. What I really needed was an ability to say, all right, this is a decision you need. You need to figure out what market you want to be in, become an expert on it. And here are the things you need to think about. You need to know what type of loan programs you're going to go after. And here are the ways of researching it. You need to know how to get on lists if that's what you want to do so that you can underwrite properties and do a lot of reps looking at the numbers. Because until you know your numbers, you don't really know anything in commercial real estate acquisition, right? So what I did is really kind of cleared through that mud, really, you know, helped people focus their own thoughts so that they would recognize the sweater as they requested it from grandma as soon as they see it. Because once you prime your brain, whether you think it's woo-woo or neuroscience, the reticular activating system, it's, in my opinion, completely changed my life when I learned how to turn it on. Just like when you bought your white Tesla, now you go see your white Tesla everywhere, but they were always there. But now your brain is primed to see them. So how do you set yourself up to see that thing? And, you know, one more thing in this multifamily stuff, I love to buy, you know, 30 to 50 unit property so that I can get that better loan. Think about it. If you're cash flowing, you know, $10,000 from a 30 unit property, how many of those do you need before you have a floor of income that leads to a fabulous life? If you're right five times in your whole life, you have set up generational wealth, right? You don't need to be right 1,000 times. You need to be really right 4 or 5.
That is so good. I want to put a little pressure on you. I kind of want to understand. So I rarely go into like getting the weeds on the mentoring program, but what does the mentoring program look like?
So there's kind of three levels. There's a little, you know, you can buy the modules and kind of self-pace. There's an underwriting. We do a 6-week underwriting intensive because learning to trust your own judgment with the numbers when you're kind of groping into the darkness about it, underwriting anything commercial real estate is all dependent on assumptions. And I assume this is the rent I get. And I assume these are going to be the rent increases. And I assume these are going to be my taxes. Well, if you can get as close to truth as possible on those assumptions and really start to trust your judgment, that's how making offers is going to feel really powerful, right? So you've got to learn how to trust that own judgment. That's kind of what we try to achieve on the underwriting intensive. And then the 6-month mentorship, we walk you through basically the same things that happen in that course, but we go deep and kind of handhold, and it's a small cohort. So you need, in my opinion, you get one market. Because I FOMOed, I did Indianapolis, Kansas City, Indianapolis, and I did nothing for like 2 years because I was spread so thin. But now I know that on the outside of the Beltway, you're going to get that rent, but not on the inside of the Beltway of Indianapolis, because I've doubled down and I consider myself to really know that market. So I'm really laser focused on that. You really need to know what loan program you're going to go for, so that when you're inputting into your numbers, that you have a really good close to truth guess as to what your loan payment will be. You need to understand what property management strategies you're going to take on. There's a lot of things. If you begin with the end in mind, it's just knocking down dominoes, right? So that you can go out and be looking at 1,000 different things and be a little unsure on a bunch of them, or you can know exactly what gray sweater you're looking for. And the minute you see it and, oh my God, this is cash on cash, 10% year two, I'm buying it. This is the maximum that I can pay. And you can come in a way that's really appropriately aggressive, so that you win the deal when it becomes available. So it's all just making decisions to focus yourself.
Yeah. And my audience knows this, but I seriously rarely ask, and I actually try to avoid, you know, really getting too into the coaching programs. But the reason why, and again, my audience knows this, you don't, because I've never met you before. And full disclosure, like, we don't have an affiliate program. I don't want one. But I'm really, you've struck a chord with me, because, you know, there's a lot of people that go the single family route. And I'm not saying it's a bad thing or a good thing. I went that route. But then there's a lot of people too that, you know, with the bigger programs, as you said, that, you know, spend 50 or 100 grand or whatever. And it's what I love about what you said is, like, that 30 to 50 range. I've owned up to 35 mobile home park communities. I started with a 72 space after I bought two single families, bought it on accident. I kind of fell into this. But when I fast forward, like, I found this niche where I said, I'm not going to buy less than 70, because we are buying in, I mean, I own in Indiana and Kansas and Missouri and all Ohio, all the places, but I needed at least 70. Mm-hmm. And I feel like people get mentored on the one or two houses at a time, or they get mentored on a big level. My most profitable mobile home park ever, outside of my first one, when I really started understanding, was an 8-unit in my backyard that I bought in a portfolio. I would have never bought it if it wasn't part of a portfolio, but it made me really start realizing, and I've had this conversation with so many people that want to get started, and I'm like, it doesn't have to be 100 spaces. It doesn't have to be 200 spaces. Like, buy 20, 30, 40, 50. And that's why I was like, I wanted to pull on it a little more, because I think you're in a place where, you know, my audience, again, the, you know, they're successful W-2 people. They're generally successful business owners. And I think you have something that could really help people.
Thank you. And I mean, whether or not I work with anybody that apply these ideas, I just get really clear of what you're looking for. I work to pre-curate the path, if you want kind of the easy button, but like that, all that it takes is to pick a market, become an expert, pick a loan product, become an expert. And I think, you know, if I can maybe impart any wisdom that's kind of contrarian to the real estate investing world right now, is a lot of people like to go fish where they see a lot of fishermen. And in multifamily, everybody's fishing in the Southeast and in Texas, right? Well, I don't want to fish where there's a lot of fishermen. I want to fish where there's fish and not a lot of fishermen. Right? So where are the boring places that people are living? You can do for free a ton of going down a rabbit hole to figure out what this information is. City-data.com will tell you about the growth of population, the growth of jobs. You just need to put in the work to pick one thing to run after it.
Oh, good. Last couple minutes, I'm going to let you talk about anything you want to talk about. And then, you know, where can people find you? You said you've got a calculator you're going to give them.
Yeah, totally.
It's yours.
Well, I do want to put in a little more information about GoBundance Women. So your audience probably knows the Tribe of Millionaires, the healthy, wealthy, generous people who choose to lead epic lives. Well, the four guys who started it, they were just kind of a fraternity. And they realized, oh my gosh, this is helping everybody grow. Let's make a bigger thing out of it. And they looked up in 2020 and realized, oh wait, we're not serving women. Because at the end of the day, the level of authenticity, the level of willingness to discuss my fear of failing as a mother only really works if it's only other women in the room, and vice versa on the men's side too. So So, you know, I could not be more excited to have an opportunity to bring this type of growth, this commitment to growth in all ways for really hungry female entrepreneurs, because there's a ton of us out there. And, you know, just because you're married to an entrepreneur that is running after this doesn't mean that you can't also. So we're doing our next event in Costa Rica, and we're really focusing a lot on this business buying and growth stuff. My partner in running GoBundance Women, she helped scale a business to $12 billion, the largest solar lender. Michael Dell is her biggest investor, her company's biggest investor. So she is helping take larger business, 10 million top line revenue businesses, and help them 10X. So we've got a lot of really exciting stuff happening on the other side of the aisle and overlapping where it makes sense. So I'm sure you saw a lot of women in the micro tribes. Because these business conversations that make sense regardless of gender. So if you are a badass woman who is looking to not feel crazy, to not get, oh, it must be nice. You bought a 53-unit apartment building. It must be nice. You know those people? If you want to be next to other people doing big things and helping you feel less crazy because you are not crazy, you're just first, contact me and I'll get you in touch with the right people at GoBundance Women. But the best way to get a hold of all of the stuff that I'm working on, all of the things I have my hand in, is my website, mandymcallister.com.
So good. Well, this has been fabulous. I'm glad Tim said, get Mandy on the show. This has been super fun. So appreciate your time and just love the story and the passion. And I just think it's so cool that you're helping everybody, and love the GoBundance Women thing. It's fantastic.
Thank you, Mike. This has been so much fun.
If you found value in this episode and you know someone who's wanting to start or move further along in their journey toward investing for freedom, I would be forever grateful if you would share this show with them and help me get this message out to more listeners. Also, if you enjoy what you've heard, I would appreciate it if you'd take 30 seconds and leave me a 5-star review and share this with your friends. And until the next episode, cheers to moving further along in your journey of investing for freedom.